welcome to the Drive Podcast. Ted Henley is off for a couple of days. I'm your guest host, Jalen Nye. We have some great conversation on our show today, so let's get right into it.
A much more serious topic and an important one to talk about. It's really another black eye for Hockey Canada. Hockey Canada saying today members of its 2003 Men's World Junior Hockey Championship team being investigated for a group sexual assault. In a release earlier today, Hockey Canada said it became aware of the alleged incident last night after being contacted by a reporter seeking comment on the alleged assault. Now, Hockey Canada says it immediately contacted the Halifax Regional Police Department about the allegations because Halifax was the co-host city of the 2003 World Junior Hockey Championship. They've also contacted Sport Canada, informed it of the allegations. Now, all of this happening at the time when the organization is already under fire for its handling of an alleged 2018 sexual assault involving eight unnamed players who are on that year's men's junior hockey team. Our first guest this afternoon has a unique perspective on what's happening. Some insight. He's a former junior hockey player. He's a Graham James sexual assault survivor. He's an author and a lawyer. Greg Gilhooly, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me today.
Greg, where's your head at when you hear this latest allegation?
Well, it's sad. I mean, when things like this come out, sad is the only word that comes to mind. Unfortunately, it's not surprising, though, right? This is a part of hockey culture, and anyone who's been involved in the game of hockey, and especially junior hockey in Canada, understands that these things happen. Junior hockey in Canada is structured such that you've got teenage boys living away from home in smaller communities, operating as gods with very little accountability. And so this is very much a part of junior hockey. The sad thing is always when the specific details come out, and this is especially sad given that these players represented the country as members of the national junior team.
You know what? My husband and I were talking about this earlier today because he'd had a conversation with someone at the gym this morning. My husband played junior hockey, was offered a scholarship down into the United States, played hockey for a long time. And was talking about that accountability factor, number one. And number two, and you touched on it, about how these players oftentimes are treated like gods. How do we change that?
Well, let's take a step back first and acknowledge that society generally has a problem with sexual assault. Mm-hmm. And we are getting better at recognizing that and dealing with it. But it is a societal problem, and it is one that is unfortunately built and comes out of power inequities, and you've got stronger boys, young men around physically weaker women, and bad things can happen. But you add the layer of hockey into this, and you've got a couple of additional factors. You've got these kids who are treated as gods. They're recognized as stars within the community. And so you can have women who may be they're just taken out of their game a little bit, and that they want to be a part of that. And they find themselves in situations that they didn't want to be a part of, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. In the first instance, you've got a woman who apparently went back to a hotel room with one player and ended up with eight players. Mm-hmm. And I guarantee you, when she was, you know, getting dressed to go out that night, she had zero intention of having sex with eight guys that night. But things happen and lines are crossed, and we weren't there, but did she really consent? Not a chance. Not a chance in hell.
So, Greg, how do we change it? How do we change the culture? Where does it have to start? To me, it's a multi-layer thing. It's got to be from the organizational side of it, parents, coaches. It's just not one layer.
Well, I think that's exactly right. I mean, let's start with how we educate young men. We have to understand, the young men have to understand that just because they can, you know, doesn't mean that they should. You have to instill in these players an understanding of lines they simply cannot cross, even if opportunities present themselves. And so that gets into the whole issue of how do we raise young men generally. Hockey has an additional problem in that the culture of the game is to protect the team and to focus on the logo on the front of the jersey and not do anything that jeopardizes the best interests of the team. And that brings about protecting bad behavior, a cloak or cone of silence. and a lack of a commitment to the truth and doing the right thing in situations. And I got to tell you, you get any group of young men together, all it takes is one or two guys in a group to make the bad decision, and you've got the entire group going along with the bad decision. And that unfortunately means that it's a change that's going to take time. It's going to take education. It's going to take oversight. Hockey Canada should be drilling into its national team members what they can and can't do, what is acceptable and what isn't acceptable. But then in addition to that, you've got these institutions and organizations that are led with people who have been there for decades, and they've grown up in that culture. And yes, you can educate people all you want, but unfortunately, I think for culture change to take place, you've got to get rid of a lot. You've got to get rid of the people who've been running the show.
Yeah, I mean, there's talk in the talk, and then there's walk in the walk, right? You can talk about it all you want, but you have to actually really put some teeth behind it. Greg, before we run out of time, I want to ask you, as a survivor, what impact do these ongoing revelations coming out of the hockey world, what impact does it have on a survivor?
Well, it's gut-wrenching to hear the stories because, I mean, I closely identify whenever I can imagine the pain that this woman's going through coming forward, and now this new person coming forward, and Kyle Beach and the Chicago Blackhawks situation. But at the same time, it's good, right? Because one of the reasons I came forward, I wasn't able to come forward when Sheldon Kennedy did. But one of the reasons I came forward was he gave me the strength to come forward. I was hoping that if I came forward, I would give others the strength to come forward. Kyle Beach says exactly the same thing when he comes forward. These women, I'm sure, will be disheartened to know that there will be others who come forward because of their strength and bravery. But in the end, that is a good thing. But it is gut-wrenching to revisit the abuse because of course, my thinking is going back to what I went through, and it's tough. But at the same time, you got to see the glass half full, not half empty. And so I try to force myself into seeing this as good, productive progress.
If you want to read more about Greg's story, his book that he wrote is called I Am Nobody. Greg, I want to thank you for joining me this afternoon. I could probably talk to you for the rest of the hour. Unfortunately, I'm out of time. Let's do it again sometime, okay?
Thanks very much for having me on today.
Take care. Greg Gilhooly joining us again, an author, former junior hockey player, Graham James sexual assault survivor. He's a lawyer as well. Just kind of comes at this whole issue from a really interesting and unique perspective. I think it's important here that, you know, we don't paint everybody with the same brush, but there is obviously an issue, and it's an issue that needs to be dealt with. And I can say the sooner the better, and that's true, but we know that change and grand change takes a long time, and there has to be the willingness, the stick-to-itiveness, And really just the drive to make sure it happens. And let's hope it does. So my question for you this afternoon has been this. When is the last time you had a tune stuck in your head that you couldn't get out? What was the tune? When I was visiting my family at the beginning of the month, so went home to Sault Ste. Marie, this was the one that was stuck in my head. Really? Barry Manilow? That was the one that gets stuck in my head? I was singing outside of the hotel, and I sent you away, oh Mandy. And my husband's looking at me, like, literally just turned and walked away. He was like, what is going on here? In the past week, this is the one that has been stuck in my head. They say Brandy, you're a fine girl. Again, like, come on, really? I was 2 years old when that song came out. Why not Poison or some Motley Crue or something? So when a tune gets stuck in your head that you can't get rid of, it's called an earworm. But what exactly are they? How does it work? How do you get rid of them? Let's find out with Michael Edwards, Director of Strategic Initiatives and Exhibits at Science East in Fredericton. Michael, welcome to the show.
Hello, Jalen.
Do you have, what's the most recent song stuck in your head?
honestly, it just depends. It's one of these weird things that when it comes to earworms, some people call them just sticky music. And there's a very personal connection. It might be a song that you'll remember from your childhood, something that gets played in your family all the time, something your mother always starts singing when she's been, enjoying herself over the festive season. It could be all of those things.
Really? So it's not one thing directly that makes it stick in your head?
Well, there's other elements as well, but familiarity is one of those reasons why when you say what your earworm is to someone else, they might look at you as if to say, that's the one that got stuck in your head, like Barry Manilow, for instance. That's maybe a personal one. There's the singability, the fact that as soon as it comes on, you just start belting it out. That's one of the other important things. But the really neat thing is it has to do with how the song is actually constructed, or at least the piece of music. It's not necessarily a pleasant thing. It can be. It can be just a catchy song, a song that you enjoy. But it can be something that's really annoying, unpleasant, and all these other things. And there's something about the way the notes are put together. So it's kind of fairly upbeat. Tends not to be slow songs. It tends to be something that's repetitive. It's got a short chorus or the same words or something that keeps coming back. And even though it's fairly ordinary sounding, there's something about it that just makes it a little bit unusual. And that could be the beat, it could be the pitch, it could be the length of the bit that's really familiar that gets stuck in your head. But there's something just not quite normal. And it's what anyone who's trying to write a hit song is trying to do as well.
Michael, what part of the brain, does it impact a certain part of your brain?
Yeah, it's the auditory cortex. So it's the part that deals with hearing. And what's fascinating about earworms is this is a really completely involuntary thing. You can't stop it from happening. So it just seems to get in there. Supposedly there are some people who are completely immune to it.
Really?
Although chances are you don't know anyone who is, so I don't know how honest that is. Maybe some people just won't admit to it. But because it's getting stuck in there, the way to actually see if you can deal with it is to try and mess up your short-term memory, the bit that it's kind of looping around in. And if you can mess with that memory connection, then maybe there's a chance of escaping from the earworm a bit quicker than you normally would.
So would you put another song on? Would you play a game? What would you do?
There's a bunch of ways of doing it. And I would just like to say I'm not advocating any of these ways.
Okay.
And if they don't work out, I don't want anyone coming to New Brunswick to pick a fight with me or anything like that. But supposedly, the things that work, one is to just pick a word and keep saying it again and again and again.
Pick a word. Say again.
Just any word and just say it repeatedly. And supposedly what that does is just kind of messes up that whole system because your head starts going, why are they saying that word all the time? And it just kind of fries the circuit a little bit.
It sounds like focusing on something else, like spending some deep time focusing on something could be the trick.
It does seem that focus is one of the things. Chewing gum is another one that allegedly helps as well. And considering that a lot of people chew gum to help them focus when they're trying to do like studying or other things, then that would make sense as well. And another one is to solve a puzzle. Do some Sudoku.
Oh, yeah, well, those include numbers, and I can't do that. So.
Or do a crossword, do some kind of, do Wordle, something that basically occupies your head and takes you away from that moment. There is that idea of putting another song in there. You were worried about that. And one of the ones, there was a really interesting survey from the UK. I'm from Scotland, and so I tend to look at the media over there. And when they were looking at the most common earworms, one of the things that really helped is to sing God Save the Queen.
Okay, God Save the Queen. Good to know.
Because it's just this kind of innocuous piece of music that's familiar but doesn't do anything. So maybe O Canada works as well. Who knows?
One more question before I have to let you go, Michael.
It would
seem that that people who write music and search for that next hit might be interested in the formulation of earworms and what makes an earworm. Is that something that you've heard of, that people are looking to see what gets stuck in people's head to maybe write the next big song?
To get an understanding of these things, they're always trying to look at the mechanisms. And then these days, because they can take any potential mechanism and turn it around using artificial intelligence, they've actually attempted to make earworms using computers writing generic things. People have seen AI interfaces on the internet that do pictures and other things as well. But they tried to do this, and there was a collaboration between some musicians and computer people, and they actually had a name. They put together an album. It's called Sky G. I heard a little bit of it. Wasn't that earwormy? But it took all the bits and pieces from the puzzle and they wanted to see if they could actually do it. And they didn't really have that much success, no hits or anything like that. But that's what lets you know that it doesn't have to be something particularly good. It's a reason, if you want to think of the commercial applications, advertising jingles is a more common one.
Yeah.
Because think about how many times someone just says a few words from an advertising jingle and you finish it off.
Yeah, exactly. Michael, want to thank you for this afternoon. Fascinating stuff. Have a fantastic weekend.
You too. Take care.
Take care. Michael Edwards joining me this afternoon talking about earworms, why they happen, and more importantly, how to get rid of them, because you're texting in this afternoon. It is a pretty wide range of tunes rolling around in all of our heads these days. Pick a word, focus on it, say over and over and over again, maybe chew a piece of gum, and do some puzzles. That's what Michael was suggesting. So someone said on the songs that were stuck in my head, like Brandy by Looking Glass, which came out in 72, and then Mandy, which I think came out in like 1970 by Barry Manilow. They said, are you 70? I know it, right? I'm like, why are those songs in my head? Like, what happened? The Pina Colada song, a lot of you texting in about. Do you like pina coladas? Woohoo! On the weekend I'm going to, but not rolling around in my head.
Hey, I'm Ted Henley. Thanks for listening to The Drive Podcast. Please tell your friends about what you're hearing. Also, please rate, review, and subscribe. This podcast, of course, is free wherever you get your favorite content. If you want to hear The Drive with Ted Henley live, then please tune in or stream the show weekday afternoons from 3 to 6 on Global News Radio 770 CHQR.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.